It's Wednesday, September 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, Pope Francis arrives in the United States.
And when it comes to global crises today, I fear that too many in the United States believe we can insulate ourselves from the world's problems and leave it to the countries of the region and Europe to sort out.
A former top U.S. diplomat weighs in on the Euro refugee crisis. Also ahead, distress for global markets, and there's new music from a Jonas brother. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Pope Francis has arrived in the United States for his first ever visit after completing a four-day trip to Cuba with a mass in the eastern city of Santiago. His message has been one of peace, reconciliation, and change. The 78-year-old pontiff will be meeting with President Barack Obama and address a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress, and then he'll be on to New York and a speech before the U.N. General Assembly. He will end his visit with a participation in a global family conference in Philadelphia over the weekend. Monday in the eastern city of Holguín, the Pope, marking his 62nd anniversary of his call to the priesthood, told tens of thousands at an outdoor mass to slowly overcome preconceptions and reluctance to think that people can change. The Reverend Brian Lucas, General Secretary of the Australian Catholic Bishops' Conference in Canberra, told VOA's Victor Beattie the Pope's message is aimed at reconciling those who support and oppose the communist government.
Essentially, what Pope Francis is saying to people is that there is a dignity that goes beyond the appearances, beyond sin, beyond failure. There is a human dignity there that we have to look for. And so we see in Matthew the tax collector, the person who was despised by the people around him, someone who responded to the call of Jesus. What Pope Francis has done is to take that particular example, emphasize then the response of Matthew to the call, and invite the people listening also to respond to the call, to see beyond the appearances in their relationships with other, and to be aware that, as the Pope says, you know, if a tax collector can become an apostle and a servant, he went on to say in that particular homily, is it possible that one day the traitor can become a friend? So he's speaking to a group of people whose relationships probably are very ambiguous. There were people within Cuba who followed the regime, people who rebelled against the regime. He's in a milieu where, at the moment, there are dissidents against the current government. And what he's saying to people is, can we see beyond the appearances so that traitors can become friends?
Tens of thousands turned out for him in Holguín and also in Havana, even though 10% or less of Cubans identify themselves as Roman Catholic these days in what has been an officially atheistic country. To what do you attribute the mass turnout, and what do you think he accomplished in his mission there?
I think it's very difficult to assess so early what the accomplishments will be. You can get the immediate euphoria, but we've got to see what seeds are planted that eventually will take root. But there's always the curiosity factor, and in many visits, not only of Pope Francis, but his predecessors, quite often the visit starts with a certain negativity, often a negativity by some elements of the media, but the euphoria takes over, and people like a spectacle. People like to be part of a crowd. People want to come out with others. There'd be a curiosity factor that's part of this as well. But also, I think there's probably in the Cuban people, in the young generation that he's trying to appeal to, that fundamental human curiosity of what does my life mean? Where is my life going?
What do you think he'll hope to accomplish during his visit to the U.S. and the U.N.?
I think that the visit to the United States, and I'm being a bit speculative here, will certainly draw enormous attention right around the world. I mean, the White House press corps, the United Nations press corps, has such resources that there will be no country in the world that will be not touched and able to have access to what he says. This is an enormous audience. And I think he will want to give a message that's not simply a message for the American people. It's a message for humanity, and I think he will build on what he said in Laudato Si. He'll talk about some of those fundamental ethical imperatives. You know, why is it that our world is being torn apart by conflict, by violence, where we've got this massive movement of people coming into Europe at the present time who are fleeing persecution or who are looking for an opportunity for a better life? What is it about we as humans and the way we relate to each other that allows these things to happen. I think that will probably be a key message.
Patrick Hornbeck, Chair and Associate Professor of Theology at Fordham University, says Pope Francis will encounter a divided U.S. Catholic Church, and success will hinge on his ability to communicate with those who support his change in tone, while also reassuring traditionalists concerned over reforms and try to re-engage those who are disaffected. Well, we discussed the Pope's visit to Cuba, but now it's time to check out what people are saying about his arrival here in the United States on the Internet. Our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, joins me in Studio 22 to bring us the latest. Hello, G.
Hello, Jim. Pope Francis, or Papa Frank, as I like to call him, is in the DMV area, and the excitement here is almost palpable. For our listeners outside of the U.S., the DMV stands for D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. He arrived in Maryland around 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and he's actually here in D.C. right now.
Well, that's better than arriving at the Department of Motor Vehicles. So what's a Twitter handle that we can follow to keep updated?
I would say the White House account. And I know it's not the most intuitive answer here, but if you follow at White House on Twitter, you can watch a video clip of the Pope's arrival. Here's what the account tweeted along with the clip. Watch Pope Francis meet with the president, the first lady, the vice president, and his wife as he touches down in America. Hashtag Pope in D.C. Now, instead of spelling out the dignitaries, the account used their handles, which are at Pontifex, at POTUS, at FLOTUS, at VP, and at Dr. Biden.
Certainly a handful of handles there. How often was hashtag Pope in D.C. used?
Jim, more than 27,000 tweets use the hashtag in the last 24 hours. That's a lot considering he is arriving in D.C. as we speak. What's really cool is that whenever you use the hashtag, Twitter generates an image of the Capitol in your tweet.
Oh, that is cool. Well, how about the media reaction?
Well, of course, media is having a great day over the Pope's visit today, but let me just introduce one. The digital media website Mashable tweeted about the Pope Mobile. Mashable sent out a tongue-in-cheek tweet that reads like this. The Pope heads off chasing the American dream in a Fiat. Hashtag Pope in DC. I guess Mashable is fascinated with the Vatican's choice of Pope Mobile because it sent out multiple tweets about it. Another one reads like this. Pope's holy ride is cute Fiat 500L. Hashtag blessed. By the way, Pope Mobile is just an informal name for the car a Pope uses during outdoor public appearances like this one. And Pope Francis is known for his humble way of life, and his Pope Mobiles are always the smaller ones. Jim?
Well, thanks for that great analysis. Our social media guru, G. Abby Lee. Don't forget to follow her on Twitter, at G. Abby Lee. And you can also follow our VOA International Edition account. It's at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. European Union interior ministers, over the objection of four countries, approved a controversial quota plan Tuesday to distribute 120,000 migrants throughout the 28-nation bloc. The interior ministers adopted the plan by majority vote ahead of a Wednesday summit of EU leaders in which several Central European countries will have a chance to again voice their opposition to the country-by-country quota proposal. Nearly a half million migrants, 40% of them Syrians, have crossed the Mediterranean this year, fleeing war and poverty in the Middle East in search of a better life in Europe. The United Nations Refugee Agency says the constant stream of migrants is so large, 6,000 a day landing on European shores, that a relocation plan covering 120,000 migrants will not be enough to stabilize the situation. Meanwhile, the United States announced nearly $419 million in additional humanitarian assistance to help those affected by the conflict in Syria. With this new funding, total U.S. humanitarian assistance since the start of the crisis is now more than $4.5 billion. According to the U.S. Department of State, more than half of Syria's population, 12.2 million people, is in need of humanitarian assistance. The Syrian crisis grows increasingly dire every day, and Russia is increasing its military assistance to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Mohammed El-Shenawi, senior Middle East reporter for International Edition, followed a discussion at the U.S. Institute of Peace about what is beyond the refugee crisis. Mohammed, one of the major speakers was former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. What was her take on?
Well, Jim, Albright reminded the audience that she and her family sailed to the United States as refugees from Czechoslovakia and urged a more generous response from the United States.
And when it comes to global crises today, I fear that too many in the United States believe we can insulate ourselves from the world's problems and leave it to the countries of the region and Europe to sort out. The idea that we can stand aside or wait for others to act is an illusion, mocked by the lessons of history.
Albright noted that the Syrian war, now in its fifth year, has claimed the lives of almost 250,000 people, displaced more than 7 million within Syria, and has created almost 5 million refugees, most of whom have dispersed across Syria's neighborhood, and some of whom are now streaming into Europe.
But even with more generous assistance to the fleeing Syrian refugees, the suffering of the Syrian people will continue to rise unless the killing stops.
That's exactly what Albright stressed, Jim, and said that the United States should pressure Russia in the upcoming talks, whether diplomatically or militarily, to convince their ally in Damascus to stop targeting his own people.
If the Russians really do think that they have some influence on Assad, they can be a part of this and say, we can discuss whether you're in the government or not, but we cannot discuss it if you are dropping barrel bombs. And they should use their influence that way. If the Russians wish to be seen as a normal country, I think it would be useful if they said something that made clear the barrel bombs are not the way to deal with civilians.
Albright also stressed that at the heart of the matter lies the international community's failure to find a way to end the catastrophic violence in Syria. And there was another panelist, Stephen Hadley, a former U.S. National Security Advisor, and he has this opinion. He said, the absence of political engagement is not just making it worse, but is actually unattainable. So all panelists agreed that ending the war in Syria is key to finding a solution to that migrant crisis in Europe.
Thank you very much, Mohammed. Mohammed El-Shenawi, who's bringing us this perspective.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Global markets have been dropping today, and to find out more, Alexis Christophorus joins us from the VOA New York Bureau. Alexis, what has been the cause of today's sell-off?
The U.S. stocks joined a worldwide decline in equities as a sell-off in commodities resumed. We also saw auto stocks take a tumble. That's amid a widening Volkswagen emissions scandal. There is some speculation it may lead to tougher regulations for the entire industry. Shares of Volkswagen tumbled 20% after sinking 19% on Monday. The manufacturer has set aside about $7 billion to cover fallout from a scandal affecting 11 million cars. Analysts say it's a combination of confusion after last week's Fed meeting, a renewed drop in commodities, and continued fear about China. They say the U.S. market still needs to find a bottom, and we're not sure it has done that just yet. The dollar reached its strongest level in almost 2 weeks against the euro, and commodities prices suffering once again. Industrial metals fell amid renewed concern over slowing economic expansion in China, and the yen climbed on increased demand for safe haven assets. We saw Brazil's real sink to a record low to lead emerging market assets lower. And we also saw more commodity-producing nations get hit regarding their currencies, including South Africa's rand, New Zealand's dollar, and like I mentioned, Brazil's real. Jim?
With concerns about the economy, both in the short run and in the long term, and in with regards to China's problems, we have President Xi Jinping coming to Washington.
That's right. And there is much on this agenda, everything from cyber attack crimes to military operations to territorial issues and, of course, the economy. And many are saying that President Xi's visit here is really to try to calm fears about the slowing Chinese economy and to hopefully find some common ground between the two countries when it comes to these cyber attacks. We know China has been denying these hackings, but President Obama has come out quite strongly saying that the U.S. is ready to impose sanctions against both Chinese businesses and individuals if these attacks do not stop. So there is no great hope that real agreements will come out of this summit, but they believe that there will be a little more showboating as opposed to actual agreements being signed or, you know, them coming to some sort of an agreement on the major issues. But nevertheless, it is a good sign that these two leaders are coming together to talk about real issues, everything, like we said, from the economy to national security.
We always look for common ground, and we're always on very strong ground when we talk economics with Alexis Christophorus. Alexis, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, the market also is looking up for singer Nick Jonas, who has a new single, Levels, which is off a CD that's set to be released early next year. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Border Crossings host Larry London about the song and Nick Jonas's career, which started at Disney with his older brothers Kevin and Joe.
They became famous on Disney, working with Demi Lovato. They appeared in the film Camp Rock and Camp Rock 2, and they were the it group until a difference of opinion led to their breakup, and then they went in separate directions. They're from Texas, and originally the group started to be the backup group for brother Joe Jonas, but it ended up being a very pop-oriented band. All the young girls fell in love with what they did. They were on tour with Miley Cyrus. And Nick was dating Miley for a little while. Then he went on to date Selena Gomez. So he's had quite a storied romance, shall we say, in the music business.
And this particular song is the first single off of the new album, is it not?
No, it's the third single.
Is this the third one?
The other two songs are Chains and Jealous.
Okay.
He hasn't released the album yet. He's kind of been tossing ideas about the album around. And he was also thinking about re-releasing his very first album, which, you know, he thought we'd rework some music. I was just watching an interview with him where he said he can't really define his sound. He just kind of knows that this is where he is today and this is what he's created. And people asked him, what is your sound? He said, I don't know. I do what I do. And it's kind of a mixture of pop and, you know, dance and hip hop, a little combination of everything.
Devils, devils, devils. Get on my elevator, baby.
And speaking of dance, his brother Joe, who you said was they used to be the backup group for, has got his own group, DNCE, which is really a dance-oriented group. That's their sound. They're more into club and electric dance music than Nick. Nick, this is more, it's almost like Justin Bieber's kind of flavor.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe him. I know that the sound that he's created for his latest album is doing very, very well, very popular. Nickelodeon gave him a Kids' Choice Award for Best Male Artist this year, and he's nominated for the MTV Award for Europe in Milan, Italy, coming up for the, it's the Best U.S. Act. So he's in the category of Best U.S. Act.
Wow. That's a pretty big category.
That's a big title.
That is, if he wins that one. And now, you mentioned that he is kind of going more towards a unique sound. He's defined his sound as kind of a mixture of R&B and a little bit of dance and a little bit of pop. So it's a little bit of everything.
Yes. And he does, you know, a great job with what he does. And he seems to have the whole package. In fact, he is now doing a lot of acting stuff. He's on the Scream Queens new TV show. He's going to have a reoccurring role. He was seen on set with long hair and a beard when they were filming his episode this past week, as a matter of fact. He's also got another film, a big screen film coming out called Goat. He appears in that as well. So he's very busy with his acting as well as his music.
All right. Well, if you want to learn more about Nick Jonas, you can always ask Larry by sending a tweet to @VOAMusic. Or you can hit him up on Border Crossings, his Facebook page. And if you want to hear Border Crossings, you can tune into our webpage. That's voanews.com.
Been listening to International Edition. We're always at our website, voanews.com, and we hope you join us there along with our Twitter page. Follow us on Twitter @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Fundamedios, an Ecuadorian free speech group founded in 2006, may soon have to close its doors. The Ecuadorian government announced on September 8th its decision to initiate legal steps intended to dissolve Fundamedios. The United States, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby, is very concerned about the increasing restrictions on freedom of expression and freedom of association in Ecuador. Under President Rafael Correa, verbal and legal attacks against the media and civil society have intensified. According to the latest State Department Human Rights Report, new regulatory bodies established under the law have issued a series of sanctions, fines, and forced corrections and retractions, primarily against independent media. Fundamedios, which started the year before Ecuador's current president Correa took office, defends journalists and news outlets that have been targeted by the government for lawsuits and fines. Fundamedios has also been highly critical of a restrictive new communications law that went into effect in 2013. Many rights groups, said spokesperson Kirby, have spoken out against the Ecuadorian government's latest action against Fundamedios. Human Rights Watch said in a statement, "The Correa administration wants to punish an organization for tweeting articles with news and opinions it doesn't like. This is an egregious abuse of power and a clear example of this government's authoritarian practices." The Committee to Protect Journalists said in a statement, "We urge Ecuadorian authorities to immediately withdraw this politically motivated procedure and allow Fundamedios to continue its work without any government interference. An active civil society and tolerance of dissenting views are vital components of any democracy. The U.S. shares international concern over the Ecuadorian government's efforts to silence critical voices and deny its citizens access to a diversity of information and ideas. The U.S. calls on the government of Ecuador to honor its commitments under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the American Convention on Human Rights by upholding freedom of expression and association as fundamental democratic rights."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.